preached for a congregation that didn't have any clocks on it. Don't pay any attention to this one, it don't work. Didn't have any clocks in the building. They didn't have any calendar. I preached one place that had a calendar up there. You know, I don't know how long-winded the preacher was, but it had a calendar up there. But I'll tell you where this was. I think that's where it is. Went down West Monroe several years ago, White's Ferry Road. And I got up to speak, and no clocks anywhere. You know, I thought, boy, I got them now. And I looked down, and lo and behold, built into the pulpit, flush mounted, was a clock. And I looked at it, placed my notes over it, and went on. So, despite the clock, we're going to go on. We're a very, if you haven't guessed, those of you not been present in one of these workshops of ours before, if you don't know, we're rather informal, so, you know, if you want to look at the jacket, you better look at it this morning, because we tend to come out of the ties in the afternoons and all of that. So just make yourself comfortable, because we are here to enjoy ourselves and learn something as well. Several months ago, I forgot to turn the tape recorders on. Several months ago, we asked our next speaker to come to Pine Bluff and speak to the congregation there. But the main purpose of it really was to bring Bill Crossman to Cummins Prison. Nobody can identify any better with an inmate than one who has walked in his shoes. And Bill did a marvelous job of presenting the gospel of Christ in the Sunday morning chapel down there. And I still hear comments about good comments about Bill Crossman. I met Bill Crossman a long time before I actually met him. I was introduced to Bill Crossman by Billy James and others who had talked about this fellow who's locked up, yet at the same time, he is evangelizing cell block by cell block. And to me, that is fantastic. And I tell the men I deal with, fellas, if you can make it in here as a Christian, you can make it on the outside. Here's a man who made it and who has done countless untold good. It's one of those success stories that better told by him than me. I love him and I appreciate so much his work, and he works with the prisons in Leavenworth, Kansas, and is doing a fantastic job, and has some very keen insight into the things that you and I need to know, especially those of us that have been there, yet we really haven't been there. You know, there's quite a bit of difference in being able to walk up to the gate or to the door and the lock pops open and you walk out. I got locked up in a county jail one time for 45 minutes, like lost my mind. But Bill has been there, and Bill has come a long way back home. And I hope that you'll give Bill Crossman your undivided attention. Bill.
Thank you very much, Charles. I came downstairs this morning without a tie or a coat on, thinking that I would be quite relaxed. I met Ron Goodman back a year or so ago at the Leavenworth workshop, and he made quite an impression on me. So when I saw him sitting at the table with his tie on, but he didn't have a coat, so I ran back upstairs and put my tie on. Then I came over here this morning and I see he had his coat on. So I ran back to my room and got my coat to put it on. And now I see he's back over there without his coat on again. I wish, Ron, that you'd make up my mind. I don't always think that having been in prison is the panacea of knowing the answers of many of the inmates. As a matter of fact, there are a segment of inmates that I couldn't even touch because of having been an inmate. Because I was an inmate, there's nothing I can tell them. They want nothing to do with it. You know? And I think Billy James ran into that one time at Stateville. We was talking about Clyde Thompson at a Bible class, and Billy was using him as an example and talking about this book that Clyde had written, X-83. And there was one man in the class that says, well, I wouldn't read that book, says that man ain't got a thing he can tell me. He ain't nothing but a convict. He can't tell me a thing. And there is that attitude, and you have to face those attitudes as they are. What I'd like to get into, and I'm going to be following the notes that I have, that's in this booklet, things that have touched my heart, and things that, in many instances, I suppose, is a repeat of what went down last year at Leavenworth. But I want to make some emphasis here on prison evangelism. And this goes with respect to whether you are a prisoner working in the prison, trying to do a little evangelism, or volunteer outside going into prison. Either way, these things are true. And that is, the concept of Christianity, if it is valid, if it is everything, and it is, then it deserves and warrants the deepest respect that you can have, the most dedicated energy that you can muster up to pursue and to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. For in no other way can a man find freedom. And as Brother Thomas said a little while ago, he didn't believe in rehabilitation. I say amen to that 100%. To rehabilitate a man is to put him back in his former state. And you don't want those men in their former state. You want them in a better state. You want them regenerated. You have to suffer for the gospel. Anything that's worthwhile, you have to suffer for. And if you don't suffer for the gospel, then you haven't really touched the essence or the spirit of the gospel of Christ Jesus. And it must be taken to every creature, and you must remember that every creature means just that, every creature. When you do have this privilege of touching these things, it's like standing on the mountain of God. And as you look down over the valley, you see the sunshine of God's light getting into every plant, every flower, every creature that's in the valley. But there are some little niches, little holes in the wall, you might say, little valleys, where that sunlight just doesn't reach. Not because it can't, but because the valley will not let it. And in so doing, those that dwell in those valleys live in a position of ignorance and unknowing, of deception, of anything that would turn them around from the light of life and the life of light. Therefore, we see here souls that are cast aside. We build these warehouses for men and women to cast these souls aside, to put them out of the way, like picking up trash on the highway and throwing it in a barrel, getting ready to be picked up by the trash truck a little later. And we approach humanity that way too often. Prisons are very much a part of our society. And as a part of our society, we need to recognize the fact that they exemplify our society. And as members of this society, we need to be cognizant also of the fact that human beings, flesh and blood, are in that situation and need to be touched with the light of God. I want to make a correction in the outline under A. It says, our society, which has been so insane as to encourage the building of countless facilities, and it says for children, it should be are like as children, who thoughtlessly delight at being ill because they think they're going to escape from something they dislike, such as going to school, without realizing that the disease or the illness that they have might be something that would cripple their whole life or perhaps even take it. We approach penology in that way. We approach it from the standpoint of saying that crime is a disease. Well, if sin is a disease, then crime is a disease. But one of the things we need to recognize here that crime and sin do have a distinction. Although crime is sin, yet crime has its relationship to the society in which it exists. But sin only has its existence and only has its relationship and meaning in its relationship to God. Without God, sin has no meaning. It becomes an empty word. It's more vague than love. Therefore, we need to recognize that this sin is not a moral issue that we're talking about, but rather a concept of relationship with our Father in heaven. And that relationship is what needs to be corrected. And when we talk to inmates, one of the things we need to talk about is their worth as an individual and a creature of God. That sin is not the fact that they've committed a crime, a social disgrace, but sin is an offense against their God, their Creator, in whom they are created in the like fashion, created in the image of God. Therefore, they have a worth and a value which perhaps they never even thought of before. And chances are, the concept, when you first bring it to their minds, will be far over their head. They'll not understand what you're talking about. But you need to understand that this, I think, is a point you need to press. That in being created in the image of God, they take on God-like qualities. They are able to make decisions. They are also responsible to themselves for the acts and the decisions which they do make. And it is in this realm that they will find their worth and their ability to stand up as men and to be counted as men when they learn to accept the responsibility which is theirs and that they're going to be held accountable for anyway. I've written down here some points of view from the prison administration, taking it from the very grassroots of their purpose. I've run into the fact that from the administration point of view, prison evangelism is just something that gets in their way, and they could do just as well without it. Their main concern is security. Their concept is security. They do not care whether the inmate stays there for a long time or a short time. What they do care about is that the inmate, while there, does not breach their security. I have some personal experience in that. The warden, when I left, without asking the warden, he went out of his way to bring me back. And even to the point that he put my picture all over the country in the post office and things like that. And spent a great deal of money to bring me back to the prison that I didn't want to be. I had offended him, the administration in general, and because of that, my time in the prison was even harder than it was before. Because now, they were putting pressure on me personally, whereas before I was just one of the crowd. But now I stood out. So I'd made an impression on them, as they were trying to make an impression on me. When it came to the point where I did have a change of attitude and wanted to get into the gospel, wanted to teach the gospel, I found myself handicapped because of being labeled by the administration as a troublemaker. As I said before, their only concern was with security. Now, the prison chaplains, we've already discussed in some respect here some prison chaplains, like the ones at the Dallas County Jail. And in that situation, not just at the Dallas County Jail, but in many instances throughout the country, you find that these chaplains are guarding their own territory, their own turf, as you might say. And in this respect, they don't want anyone encroaching upon their authority. However, in the beginning, it wasn't quite that way. In the beginning of prisons in this country, it was the chaplain that was the only access that the inmate had to express any grievance whatsoever that he had. It was through the chaplaincy that the educational programs that we now have in prisons made their way, their introduction into the prisons.
It was sometimes the chaplain, the prison chaplain, that would stand in the dim light of the galleries trying to teach the man on the other side of the bars how to read. So we have a history here which is honorable, but that history is kind of like what happened to the church in the beginning. It digressed. It went into a kind of an apostasy to the point that what you came in to be confronted was a fact of a chaplain who was wrapped up in his ego, his pocketbook, his authority, his status quo. We have that problem at the Leavenworth prison, right, at the federal prison at Leavenworth right now. We still are confronting with the same chaplain that we had before, and we find the same problem that we had there before. Now, I say this to his credit, that we do now have, he's a very active chaplain, and he brings in a lot of activities for the inmates. And we do now have a much more friendly attitude with this chaplain than what we had before. I say we, I guess mainly it was me. I threatened to take this man to court a couple of times, and as a result, he didn't care too much for the Church of Christ. And he still is somewhat afraid of the Church of Christ, in the sense that when the gospel is preached, then men react to that preaching, and they respond to the gospel. Our services at one time in the Leavenworth prison was to the extent that we were not only competing with his Protestant services, but we were actually beating him out. And that goes to the credit there of Kelly Lawson. If it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have had half the men, I guess, coming to the services that we did. Kelly was the same in prison as he is out of prison, very dynamic and very energetic for the Lord's sake. And he bears the fruit that you can see of Christianity and dedication which is in Christ Jesus that he has. The inmate himself go to one extreme to another. There are some inmates that you could spend all your time in the penitentiary and you may never meet them because they would have nothing to do with you whatsoever. And there's not much you can do with a person who will not allow you to get close enough to him even to say good morning. You have those extremes which, well, as I've put down here, those people make you hate God. And also, one comment which was made of one of the chaplains there at the Leavenworth prison that we picked up on was that the closest that man would ever get to heaven would be in a TWA. He was a social worker. He wasn't a minister of the gospel. He was a promoter of entertainment, not a minister of the gospel. And the men picked up on this, just as they will pick up on you. As Ron mentioned earlier, they're going to spot you. If you don't have the genuineness, the dedication and belief of what it is that you're doing, if you don't believe in what you're doing and doing to be right, they'll spot it in a minute. And they'll get turned off on you, or they will try to use you. There's one thing about it. They may not be able to see their own problems, but they can spot it in others. They can see the weaknesses in others, and they can manipulate that weakness to their own advantage. And then there are those chaplains which, and I worked with one at the Wyandotte County Jail there in Kansas City, Kansas, who, though he is very delinquent in his understanding of the gospel and teaching it, yet as far as helping the inmate, talking to the inmate, and giving them comfort and help, support, I don't guess I've met a better person than Dean Bryant. This man goes out of his way to be with these inmates and to work with these inmates, even many times personally going to their families. And he's like the man there, as I've got written here, he's always there when I need him. And that's true of many chaplains. By saying we have problems with chaplains does not negate the fact that there are those chaplains who are running their keep, so to speak. But we're approaching this ministry not from the standpoint of chaplaincy. To me, the term chaplaincy does not mean necessarily preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. Our our work is to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, and in preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ, find hearts, good and honest hearts, that will receive that seed and allow root to grow so that the plant might grow. Now, it was mentioned here by Brother Thomas that the churches sometimes do not respond or get involved as we think they should. And I run into that problem frequently. We have approximately 55 congregations in the Metroplex area of Kansas City, Kansas City, Missouri. And out of the 55 congregations, I think we have 5 that are involved in the prison ministry in any way. The Leavenworth congregation, perhaps from a physical point of view, is very much involved in the prison ministry in that 90% of our volunteer work comes from this congregation. But we had a hard time in this congregation because they had been turned off by some of the work that had been done, and from a despondency of, well, they're in prison and we don't need to worry about them. You know, they're getting what they deserve. And the gospel is not from them, type of thing. We need to take it to people who are worthy of it. And who's worthy of the gospel? I don't know of a person that's worthy of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And yet we have all given the gospel of Jesus Christ. We're given it because God loved us, not because we deserve it in any way. And it's this concept that we need to remember when we go to inmates in prison and in these jailers, that they may not deserve it, but the spirit will need it. Now, God does change men's hearts and minds. Terry was a very good example of that. Terry, I don't want to embarrass you by bringing this up all the time, but you are a good example. I had heard an awful lot about the work that Terry was doing in the town of jail, and most of that, what I heard, came by, you know, hearsay. One report that I got was 365 and a half baptisms one weekend, and I thought, man, what's he doing? You know, grabbing him by the neck and just dunking him out of it like an old shirt in the water. So I had the opportunity to work 2 half days with him on a vacation earlier this year. And the man really works. He really works and puts in dedication that makes me kind of ashamed of myself that I don't put more into it. We baptized 18 men that afternoon, and I think we baptized more before that, And the preaching and teaching, which we went through, we spent several hours with these inmates before and after the baptism, in teaching them the fundamental principles of the baptism of Christ. After giving them opportunities for questions and answers, after giving them the Bible curriculum, one thing is that he's concentrating in one place. And as an official chaplain, he's able to work his own way. And I'm not saying he didn't have some problems. I know he did. And he fought those problems and overcome them and is overcoming them. See? Now, one of the things that we are having trouble with is that we're spread out over a large area, 4 major prisons and a half a dozen or more county jails. Now, at the present time, we're only able to cover 3 of those prisons and 2 of the county jails. Now, if we had the manpower, we could get into all these other prisons and jails and cover every one of them. We just lost a good man, Brother Leonard Watts, who was transferred from the Bonner Springs Church of Christ to the Independence Church of Christ in Independence, Kansas. And we've lost him because that's 150 miles away, and he was teaching much of our college classes there. And now we're trying to make up the difference in that. But we're having our problems in these things. But even with our problems, This last month, we've had 9 men receive Christ and be buried with him in baptism. And we now have actual Church of Christ, or I should say New Testament services, each Sunday morning at the state prison. Our total overall this year has been 44 baptisms. 43 were men and one was a woman. And in this we see great fruit. We see a progression of growth in Christ in these things. But we're able to deal with these men and these women over a prolonged period of time, which means that the work is going to be very, very strong in the years to come. I'm going to stop there because I have some material that I want to bring to your attention. Like many times when I go different places or I receive mail, people are asking me how to get into prisons and do prison work or how to approach a jail and things like this. We now have a packet which we have assembled to send to people who are interested in wanting to know the ins and outs. And we've used the material of a lot of you people in your writings and things like this and kind of incorporated into ourselves to our own purposes. One is this booklet here, which Billy James and I wrote some years ago. It needs to be revised and reworked, and I have every intention of doing that. I have a pile of notes to do it. This has to do with evaluating the prison situation, the jail situation, different opportunities of approach to jail administrations as to in getting into prisons and in dealing with prisoners, and some cautions also. We've had some experience with overstepping our bounds and maybe not really respecting the rules as we should have. This is a booklet which was brought together from the writings of our last year's prison workshop in Leavenworth. And we use this also as added material for those that are interested in it. Now, this one is written by Bill Pascal and Sister Hayes. And it has some beautiful outlines in it and some suggestions as to starting jail ministry and prison ministries and working in these positions. So we use these three as a basis, and we add other material to go with it and send a packet to individuals who write and ask for it. And if any of you here are in need or something like that, do write to us, and we will send you the packet as we have. Now, that's not all that's in it. We put some other stuff in it, too. Brother Buck Griffiths, we put a sample copy of his lessons in it also, plus of some tracts that we use, some tracts which are very successful. One of them is Rules of Bible Study. We see a lot of men that need that encouragement and guidance. I also have some material, some read material here for you if you're interested in it, our latest newsletter. And also we have a brochure. I call it a brochure. As an introduction to our work in the Leavenworth-Lansing area. And one of the things I'd like to say here is that we're working with a fine bunch of elders at the Raytown Missouri Church of Christ. These men have supported and encouraged the work at Leavenworth that I think if it was under any other circumstance, if it hadn't been for these men, perhaps the work would have fallen flat on its face, because we did have some trying times. But they had faith, and their faith was more than a surface faith. It had deep root. And in this deep root, they came through, and as a result, we came through. And I just want to give credit to our elders. There are those Christians who are very dedicated, even in times of hardship, and they come through. It makes me think of 1 Corinthians 11:19, when we get into conflicts with ourselves as well with others, where Paul says it is necessary that there be divisions among you, that those that are faithful might be made manifest. And if you want any of this stuff, you're welcome to it. And I have some other material which I want to bring up later. I understand that we going to try to have a meeting of some kind to decide on another person. Okay. There is a